Y'all ready? Okay, let me give you my list of disclaimers. Here's the disclaimer number one. Today, when I got onto Google Drive to go get to the slides so I can put my slides up, there was a bunch of links on there that said like it couldn't find the graphics and all this and wasn't working. So, no slides today. I hope that I can keep you engaged and that you can stay fully present. I guess I didn't ask you this, but if it gets bad, dude, can you just put up some pictures of something, like just to have them to look at something? Oh, they're over there. Yeah, we could just look at stories, right? So if it gets a little boring and I look over and you guys are all looking over there, I will take the feedback. Thanks. So, all right. It is awful. There's nothing like self-deprecating right when you start. Hi, my name is Wayne Randolph. I am one of six or seven teachers here at Liminal. I did it, didn't I? Gosh damn it. I did it. I have teenagers too. Yeah, there's a handful of us teachers. Today, you are here when I'm here. And if you like it, awesome. And if you don't, there is another flavor next Sunday. Please come on back. Don't judge the entire space just by Wayne. I'm also one of your pastors here. And it's strange because I have a full-time job where I'm quite busy and don't get to be around people a lot. But I do want to just say this from my heart, man, because I miss it. I miss being able to be in more like pastoral relationships. So, man, if you're struggling with stuff and you're down to talk on the phone at least for a little bit until I can get off work and come see you in person or whatever, yeah, there's a lot of crap going on in the world, and no one should be alone, amen? So, and it doesn't have to be just me because of that P-word pastor. It can just call someone in your community, call one of us, right? So, anyways, do I have any other disclaimers? Chris, am I good? Okay, all right, all right. Why don't we just pause and ground ourselves and prepare ourselves? I can still hear the chatter in my head of more disclaimers I want to give you, and the invitation for all of us is just to arrive and just to be here. To be still. Creator God, creator of breath, sustainer of life, our peace of mind. I pray that we would take this opportunity to just sink in, to settle in, and to take on the posture of expectancy and waiting. God, teach us how to hear, teach us how to listen, teach us how to speak, teach us how to love. Yeah, amen. All right. So if there was a slide, it would say stories of liminality. The 400 silent years, learning to listen in the pause. There's our title. All right. So, over the past several weeks, we have been exploring stories of liminality, stories about people living between what was and what was becoming, stories of transition, stories of thresholds. This morning, I'd like to begin with a question. What's the longest you've ever waited? Just notice what comes to mind. I have a feeling that most of us aren't remembering waiting in line at Trader Joe's or sitting at a red light. We're probably remembering something much deeper. Maybe you were waiting for healing. Maybe you're waiting for a diagnosis. Waiting for the phone to ring. Waiting for someone we love to come home. Waiting for a relationship to heal. Waiting for clarity. Waiting for a prayer we've carried for months, perhaps even years. Waiting to hear from God. I've never really been good at waiting. Some of you are smiling because you know me. I'm usually looking around the next corner, very easily excited about all that's possible, and I'm already thinking about what's possible after that possibility. Waiting has just never felt natural to me. But maybe that's one of the reasons this series is actually resonating with me. Because liminal spaces almost always ask us to wait, to live in the in-between, where one chapter is ended and another is not quite begun. As I've gotten older, I've noticed something. Actually, I've noticed more than just one thing, but I'll just share one. Some of the most meaningful moments in my life don't arrive because I figured something out. They arrive because I slowed down enough to notice, to pay attention. Pay attention to scripture, to history, to nature, to the present moment, to my own soul, to the person sitting across from me, to those quiet moments of the spirit that are so easy to miss when life gets noisy. I'm beginning to wonder if paying attention is one of the holiest things we actually ever do. As our teaching team was brainstorming the series, I found myself returning to a phrase I'd heard throughout my Christian upbringing. Maybe some of you probably grew up hearing it too. The 400 silent years. The years between the prophet Malachi and the opening of Matthew. I first heard that phrase as a kid at Valley Presbyterian Church in Sepulveda. There should be a picture. We have this crazy A-frame sanctuary that, anybody grew up in the valley? Across the street from Monroe? Anybody? No, anyway. So I first heard that phrase there at the Presbyterian Church, and eventually I went off to Bible college, and somewhere along the way I found myself teaching theology, and somehow here I am, one of your pastors, part of a teaching team, preparing a sermon on the very phrase that I don't think I ever really stopped to sit with. It was just there, part of the furniture, part of the story I had inherited. I've noticed that that's often how faith works. We inherit stories. We inherit language. We inherit ways of seeing. Most of the time, we don't even realize we've inherited them. They're just simply there, waiting patiently until one day we slow down long enough to sit with them. Preparing for this message, that's what I found myself doing, sitting with that phrase, looking at it again, rolling it around a little, wondering, what are we really saying when we call them the silent years? 400 years. Just let yourself feel that for a moment. 400 years. Children become grandparents. Generations come and go. People fall in love. They bury those they love. People are working, laughing, praying, hoping. People wondering, people waiting. 400 years is a long time. So what was happening? If you spent much time around the Bible or Christians, you've probably learned to answer the question by talking about empires. Alexander the Great, the spread of Greek culture, the Maccabean Revolt, Rome. Those are important chapters in the story, and we'll come back to them because they really do shape the world Jesus steps into. But this week I noticed my imagination wandering somewhere else. I found myself wondering about the people who woke up every morning without realizing that they were living in a period that of history that would eventually be given a name. No one woke up and said, "Well, here we are in the silent years." They were simply living the only life they knew. During one of our chapters living in southern Mexico, my dad took me to Chichen Itza. I remember standing in front of one of those massive pyramids and reaching out to touch one of the stones. I've thought about that moment many times over the years, because what fascinated me wasn't just the pyramid, which are fantastic if you can get to there, but it was the world that made it possible. Who were the people that shaped these stones? What did they talk about while they worked? What happened when everyone finally stopped for a meal? What stories found their way around the dinner table at the end of the day? Looking back, I think that moment stayed with me. I didn't have language for it then, but I find myself returning to it every now and then. And somewhere in there, I think I began paying attention to the relationship that people and culture have, the ways that people shape a culture and the ways that culture shapes people. I even went on to study sociology and cultural anthropology, and I have to imagine that that's part of the origin story there. Maybe that's why when I hear the phrase, the 400 silent years, my imagination keeps drifting towards a home. Imagine the work of the day is finally over. A simple meal has been prepared. The smell of fresh bread fills the room. 3 generations have gathered around this table. One of the children can't wait to tell everyone something that happened that afternoon. Someone laughs. Someone reaches for the bread a little too soon. It's an ordinary evening, the kind that almost nobody, or at least history, really writes about. Shema Ya Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. I found myself wondering what those words became after hearing them every morning and every evening for years. Did the youngest Jewish children whisper them before they understood them? Did parents hear them differently after difficult seasons? Did grandparents smile as another generation learned the same words they had learned as children? I don't know. I simply find myself lingering there. I've always appreciated the place that questions have within the Jewish tradition. Maybe that's one of the reasons I feel so at home there. Over the years, I've come to believe that good questions often lead us to deeper answers, and those answers have a way of opening us to even more wondering. And the conversation keeps unfolding. We keep listening to one another, to our tradition, to God. While those families gathered around tables each evening, the world around them was slowly changing. I imagine most people didn't notice it all at once. Cultures rarely change that way, do they? Most of the time, they change quietly. A new word finds its way into everyday conversation. A merchant arrives from another town with unfamiliar goods. Children grow up feeling at home in a world their grandparents are still learning to understand. One generation adapts almost without realizing it, and the next assumes it's simply the way things have always been. I found myself trying to imagine what that might have felt like. not necessarily for the religious leaders in Jerusalem or the power players, but just an ordinary family. Maybe a father comes home after a day in the marketplace and notices he's hearing more Greek than he remembers hearing a few years earlier. Maybe one of the children comes home using a new word they picked up from a friend. Maybe the grandparents exchange a glance across the table. Maybe no one says anything at all. Life has a way of absorbing change before we ever think to name it. Imagine waking up one morning and realizing that if you wanted to buy, sell, travel, or simply participate in the larger world around you, everyone expected you to speak a different language. Not overnight, this happens gradually, almost without noticing. Hebrew remained the language of worship. Aramaic was still the language of everyday life. But Greek increasingly became the language of the marketplace and commerce, education, and the wider world. Most families probably weren't sitting around the dinner table debating Hellenization. They were talking about the harvest, wondering if there would be enough work tomorrow, checking on a neighbor who wasn't feeling well, planning for an upcoming wedding, reminding one of the kids to finish their chores. They're just trying to put food on the table. Life was still life. And somewhere in the middle of those ordinary conversations, the changing world kept finding its way home. Life seems to have a way of doing that. We don't usually experience history as history while we're living it. We're just simply trying to love our families, do our work, put food on the table, care for our aging parents, and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Only later do we look back and realize that we were living through a world that was changing beneath our feet. As I continued sitting with those 400 years, I started noticing something else. The world wasn't standing still. It was becoming increasingly connected. Alexander's armies eventually moved on. Culture stayed. Greek gradually found its way into everyday life. You heard it in the marketplace, you encountered it in business, education, and increasingly throughout the wider world. If you wanted to travel, trade, study, or simply participate in the larger culture, Greek opened the doors that hadn't existed before. Again, none of that happened overnight. It happened slowly, conversation by conversation, generation by generation. I found myself wondering what that felt like for ordinary Jewish families. Again, imagine sitting around that same table that we were visiting. Grandma still prays in Hebrew. Mom and Dad move comfortably between Hebrew and Aramaic, and just enough Greek to get by. The grandchildren come home from the marketplace using words that seem perfectly natural to them. Nobody planned it. Nobody announced it. It's simply the world they're growing up in. One of the developments during this period that fascinates me is that the Hebrew scriptures were translated into Greek. We call it the Septuagint. Just pause and think about that for a moment. The sacred story hadn't changed, but now it was being heard in a different language. I wonder what those conversations were like. I wonder if some people celebrated that. I wonder if others were worried that some precious things might be lost, or their culture, their identity. Maybe both were happening around different tables, maybe even around the same table, because that's the way that change arrives. It rarely announces itself. It slowly becomes the world that we wake up in. And again, as I lingered, I couldn't help but notice something else. Every generation eventually inherits a world it didn't create. Every generation has to discern what it means to live faithfully within that world. Not the world we wish we had, the world we've actually been given. I don't think that's a new question. I think it's one of the oldest questions humanity has ever asked. Maybe that's why these 400 years still have something to teach us. The more I sat with all of this, the more familiar it began to feel. Not because our world is as same as theirs. Every generation is unique. Every culture has its own story. But every generation eventually discovers what it feels like to inherit a world it didn't create. I don't know about you guys, but it feels like the ground has been shifting beneath our feet for quite a while now. Gas prices seem to change daily. Trip to the grocery store costs more than we expected. We watch conflicts around the world, wondering what tomorrow might bring. Politics are feeling more divided than many of us can ever remember. And beneath all of that, there's this quiet awareness that the world is changing. Technology continues reshaping the way we live. Artificial intelligence is beginning to reshape the way many people work. The pace of change itself seems to keep accelerating. And some of those changes are exciting, and some are unsettling, and most are probably both. When I listen to conversations today, they don't sound all that different from the conversations I've been imagining around those ancient tables. Parents still wonder what kind of world their children are growing up in. Grandparents sometimes feel like the world they knew is disappearing. Young adults are trying to imagine a future that seems harder to predict than they once did. Most of us are simply trying to discern what faithfulness looks like here. Here, where we actually live. I've been wondering if those aren't simply the questions every generation eventually asks. How do we remain faithful? How do we raise our children well? How do we hold on to what matters most while the world around us keeps changing? Those are deeply human questions. If those ordinary families found a way to remain rooted while the world around them was changing, what might they have to teach us about remaining rooted in ours? As I sat with those families, one question just kept returning. What carried them? 400 years is a long time, friends. 4 hours can seem like eternity sometimes, yeah? Just ask your kids if you got any. It's long enough for one generation to become another. It's long enough for children to become grandparents. Long enough for stories to be handed down around countless dinner tables. Long enough for people to wonder if God was ever going to speak again. And still, morning after morning, evening after evening, they returned. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. I found myself wondering if those familiar words slowly became more than something they recited. Maybe they became a way of returning, a way of remembering, a way of becoming present again. Generation after generation, those familiar words quietly formed a people. Life was still life. Children still got sick. Loved ones still died. Empires will still go on abusing power. People still prayed. And many probably wondered if God was listening. This part of the story feels surprisingly personal to me. When our kids, Noah and Lila, were little, I used to recite the Shema with them before bed. And eventually they started saying it with me. Those are some really sweet moments. Looking back, I think we were sharing a rhythm of returning together. Over the last year, another rhythm has found its way into my life. Some of you may know that on Monday evenings, I sit with a Buddhist sangha that meets here in this very room. One of their practices eventually followed me home. I have a bell on my phone that rings 10 times throughout the day, every day, between 8 in the morning and 9 at night, randomly. Sometimes I'm working, sometimes I'm driving, sometimes I'm having a conversation, sometimes my mind is already somewhere else. But whenever I hear that bell, I quietly say to myself, listen, listen. This beautiful sound reminds me to come back to my true home in the here and now. And then I simply take a breath. Sometimes that's all I need. Sometimes I need 3 or 4. For just a moment, I return to the present moment, to this moment, to my breath, to the person in front of me, to my very soul, and again to the quiet movements of the spirit that are so easy to miss when my attention has wandered somewhere else. The more I've lived with that little practice, the more I've found myself thinking about those Jewish families, morning after morning, evening after evening, returning, remembering, and listening. And I wonder if that's part of what carried them through those 400 years. Practices that gently formed them into people who kept showing up, who kept listening, even when they couldn't yet hear. Years is a long time, long enough that waiting simply becomes part of their life. The prayers continue, the children grow up, the harvests come and go, and people learn to live faithfully inside the waiting. And then one day, someone comes home with a story. I met a man down by the Jordan. At first, it's probably just another conversation. A traveler passing through town, a merchant mentioning something he'd heard, maybe a neighbor repeating the story over dinner. You know how these things happen. One conversation becomes another. Someone tells a friend, the family brings it up around the evening meal. The story keeps moving. And soon enough, people aren't only talking about a strange man in the wilderness, they're talking about the people who went to hear him. My cousin went yesterday. Really, what'd he say? He said it felt like hearing one of the prophets again. Just imagine hearing those words. One of the prophets. For generations, those stories had belonged to their grandparents and great-grandparents. And now someone is saying it sounded like that again. I wonder what began to awaken in people. I can feel hope arising in me just telling you the story. Maybe it was curiosity. Maybe it was longing. Maybe it was hope that had grown quiet over the years. Whatever it was enough for people to begin walking toward the Jordan. Not all at once, maybe one family, then another. Friends deciding to make the journey together. Neighbors wondering if they should go too. I imagine the roads beginning to fill with conversations. What have you heard? I'm not sure. Let's go see. The conversations around dinner tables began to change. People had something new to wonder about. Roads that had been quiet now carried families making their way towards the river. Friends invited friends and parents brought their children. Hope had quietly found its way back into the ordinary conversations. And somewhere among those ordinary people, walking the same dusty roads, asking the same human questions, Jesus quietly steps into that story. Jesus eventually began gathering people around him. Some had spent their lives casting fishing nets, others collecting taxes. Some carried deep wounds. Others carried deep questions. Some were respected. Others had spent much of their lives feeling unseen. By most standards, they probably shouldn't have belonged in the same community. And yet, they kept saying yes to the invitation. They walked dusty roads together. They shared ordinary meals together. Asked honest questions. Misunderstood Jesus more than once. Laughed together, argued together, and little by little something beautiful began to emerge. Relationship as a way of growing like that. Meal by meal, conversation by conversation, step by step. I've often wondered if that's one of the reasons Jesus spent so much of his ministry around tables. Meals slow us down. They invite us to pay attention again to the person sitting across from us, the story they're carrying, to the bread we're sharing, to the simple gift of being together. As I've lived with the Gospels over the years, one thing has continued to capture my attention. Jesus always seemed to know what love required in the moment. Sometimes it was a touch, sometimes a question, Sometimes a story. Sometimes he challenged. Sometimes it was a meal. Sometimes he simply stopped long enough for someone to know that they had been seen. I wonder if that's one of the gifts of becoming present. When we're no longer rushing towards what's next or replaying what has already happened, we become available. Again, available to the person in front of us, available to the movement of the Spirit, available to love itself. Eventually, Jesus gathered his friends around one more table. And by then, they had shared countless meals together. This one probably began like so many others, bread and wine and conversation. No one around that table fully understood what the next day would bring. The questions were still there. The uncertainty was still there. The waiting wasn't over. Jesus took the bread. He gave thanks. He broke it. And he invited them to remember. All week I've been wondering what those ordinary families might think if they could see us this afternoon. Another community gathered around another table, still living in a changing world, still carrying questions, still learning how to listen, still waiting, still returning. 2,000 years have passed. Empires have come and gone. Cultures have changed. Languages have changed. Technology is changing. And yet, people still gather around tables. They still break bread. They still tell stories. They still pray and hope and wait together. Maybe that's why this meal still matters. Because every time we gather around this table, we remember. We remember the life of Jesus. We remember the love he embodied. We remember the way he noticed people, the way he welcomed them, the way he listened, the way he touched those who longed to be seen, the way he gathered unlikely people together and slowly formed them into a family. Perhaps every time we come to this table, it's another invitation to return to the presence that has always been with us, to return to one another, to return to the quiet work of love that is still unfolding among us. So as we lean into the table here, I think I've got some people that are going to come up and help, some ushers. I think we need a better name than an usher, you know? Like, we need a better name than an usher. Like, cool community participant.
Servant.
All right. Can we get one more over here? Yeah, cool. Awesome. Thank you. On the night before his death, Jesus gathered his friends around a table. A table much like so many that they had shared before. There was bread and wine. There were questions and uncertainty. And there was love. He took that bread. He gave thanks. He broke it. And he gave it to them saying, "This is my body given for you. Whenever you eat it, remember me." And in that simple act, another rhythm was born. A rhythm of remembering. A rhythm of returning, one that has quietly formed communities for generation after generation, just as the Shema had formed generations before. So this morning, I simply want to invite all of you to the table. Come as you are. Come carrying your gratitude. Come carrying your grief. Come carrying your questions. Your hope. Come if God feels wonderfully near. Come if God feels painfully quiet. Come if you're still learning how to listen. And come if today is simply another step in your journey of returning. This table has room for all of us. Practically, that looks like. Getting up when you feel led, coming to the table and grabbing, and then exiting that way and coming around back to your tables. When you guys get back sitting down, I'll do a little prayer for us, and we'll have worship team come back up afterwards. So come on up as you feel led.